Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thank you very much for joining me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been here for a while, thank you for that too. My website is out there on the Wild Wild Web at jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And check out all the other things you can do on my website, like listening to the thousands of archives, over 3,000 now, of shows we've done in the past, including every one of the ones that we've done with our good friend and our guest this half hour, Mr. Steve Forbes, who, as you know, is the editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine and the president of Forbes, a former presidential candidate and one of the best friends the marketplace ever had, and that means he's our friend too. Steve Forbes, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you, Jim.
It's good to have you back, as always, Steve. And Steve, one of the things I want to talk about first, if it's okay with you, is the Terri Schiavo case.
Right.
And what a tragedy. As a father, you have daughters. I have a daughter. It doesn't matter, daughter or son. What a family tragedy this is. And I just wanted to get that out. My heart is broken for the Schindler family over what's happened to them. And I know you echo those thoughts.
Absolutely. And I think the whole thing is a travesty that she is not brain dead. Clearly, and I just don't understand how it came to this. The whole thing just reeks of everything that is fundamentally morally wrong.
Well, I agree, and there are three ironies here that I see, Steve, that kind of puzzle me. We got conservative groups who typically want less federal government involvement. They're now encouraging the federal government to get involved, which you know, and I think I know why that happened, because there needed to be some legislation, I guess. But it's interesting, though, that the federal government got involved in this one case. That's an unprecedented issue. That's an interesting thing. The other thing is that liberal groups that typically want more federal government in our lives are scandalized by the steps the government took. And then the third thing is, and here's a question that I really want to ask somebody, where are the anti-death penalty advocates in this? You know, isn't it ironic that they seem to want, that there seem to be mute on this case?
That's a very good point. And the fact of the matter is, since she is not brain dead, since there are literally thousands of other people like her, and while it's rare, some do make recoveries or partial recoveries, the fact that they would let an infector starve to death. It's one thing if someone is brain dead and therefore only has, or somebody is truly hideously, mortally ill and only has a day or two to live.
Or on a ventilator and they can't sustain life on their own.
They can't sustain life on their own. She clearly can sustain life. Clearly she's not brain dead. And so to in effect starve her to death or dehydrate her to death just as barbaric. And I just cannot believe the courts in Florida or on the federal level can't rise to the occasion.
Well, I don't understand. I learned yesterday that apparently the lead judge in this case that got this whole thing started, never went to see Terri Schiavo.
And
he only heard from other people.
That's right. And the finding of fact that the other judges refused to overrule was done over 10 years ago, as you say, was based on incomplete information. And that's the whole point of a review process. If the original judgment was faulty, you revisit the case. But none of the judges will do it.
Well, I'm just so upset over what's going on, and to think that this family is literally, you know, watching their daughter starve to death. And I'll tell you something, Steve, and I can't speak for you, but I kind of have an idea about how you feel about this. If this were my daughter, you know, there would be an arrest being made, there'd be something going on, because I don't know what they'd have to do to take those feeding tubes out of my daughter. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely right. And I think most parents, if you put the case to them, what would you do with your daughter or son in similar circumstances? Would you just sit by and let it happen? The answer in almost all cases is absolutely not. And the whole thing just reeks. I mean, the husband gets $1 million judgment on her behalf for malpractice, and suddenly he decides that he wants that she told him that she wanted the plug pulled. I mean,
right.
It just is horrible.
Well, what I don't understand is why a judge couldn't say, okay, you know, we don't know what she said. We know what the husband said he thinks she said about life in this condition. So
only after he got the money.
Exactly. But the thing is why don't, you know, the parents want the daughter. Why don't we let them take care of her? Why couldn't they just give the daughter to the parents? That's the part I don't understand. Stand by, Steve. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back with our good friend Steve Forbes right after these messages. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, having a great visit with our good friend Steve Forbes. And he's editor-in-chief of Forbes Magazine and president of Forbes. And, Steve, that website is pretty easy, isn't it? Forbes.com.
That's right. And it gets better and better. We have a new website as part of it, ForbesAutos.com.
Yep.
For people who wish to buy upper-end automobiles. Great website. We're launching it now. So it's very easy. The content changes each day and gives you up-to-the-minute news on what's happening in the markets.
You guys are also working on helping people invest in nanotechnologies, too, aren't you?
That's right. We have a newsletter and also information on the website. This is an area with huge promise, huge investment potential, but also an area, Jim, where there are a lot of flim-flammers around. Everyone suddenly wants to be part of nanotechnology. And the service we're providing is, with Josh Wolf, our editor there, is what is real and what is hype.
Well, I'm glad to know that you're doing that because we've been fortunate enough to meet a couple of the folks who are experts in nanotechnology, and they've done some shows with us, and it's very interesting, and it's going to continue to be even more interesting as the century unfolds. Steve, let's talk about Social Security reform. You know, over 30 years ago, when the government started raising the cap on Social Security contribution, payroll tax contribution, the income cap, I started saying, I mean, I remember back in the early 70s saying, you know what, guys, I'll sign an affidavit but that I won't ask for anything when I retire. Let me put this money somewhere else. And, you know, obviously I just said that to myself because in those days you couldn't even talk to anybody about that. But now the president is talking about something not unlike that. He's going all across the country talking about this, and it's really become the topic du jour, hasn't it?
It really has. And there are a couple of things to keep in mind. One, I think that the administration should have put, Jim, a real proposal on the table so people couldn't have all of these fears that we're going to throw grandma in the gutter, that we're destroying the system, and make it very clear. For people above a certain age, the system stays the same. This is for younger people, giving them a choice. And you're right about how the money can be invested. In Galveston, Texas, as you know, three counties around Galveston pulled out of Social Security in the 1980s, the government workers there. You're allowed to do that in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even put the money in the stock market. The money went into bonds, went into insurance contracts with guaranteed interest rates. So there's no stock market risk. And those folks today, when they're retiring, are getting 50% to 200% more in benefits than they would have had under
wow.
the old system.
What is the average return on a Social Security now? It's under 2%, isn't it?
It's under 2%.
And for some demographics, like for black males, for example, it's a negative return.
That's right, because sadly, tragically, their life expectancy is less than that of the general population. And as a result, they put money in and get very little out.
And neither does their family get anything for the money that they put in.
Very little. And this way, if you own your own account, it's like an IRA or 401k. If something happens to you, the money passes on to your heirs.
Now, there's a
and that's, Jim, something that people don't understand.
Right.
The whole thing of a trust fund, the whole thing that we have individual accounts there now, is a myth. There is no trust fund.
That's right.
It's just a paper entry saying that at a certain time we're eligible for a benefit if Congress appropriates the money. It's not as if we have a savings account there. There's not a penny in it. It depends on what Congress appropriates each and every year.
Well, you've written recently about how that you don't have a problem with the debt instrument that's being proposed to fund this transition.
Well, the problem is that the unfunded liability of Social Security, like a pension fund, is already over $10 trillion.
Right.
So the obligation is there. If you do nothing, the system is either going to crash, you're going to have to cut benefits, or you're going to have to substantially raise taxes for younger people.
Right.
So this way, if you do take the borrowings now, the liability is already there.
What is the recommendation? $2 trillion?
$2 trillion, and let's call it $3 trillion. You're doing
okay.
This over 15, 20 years.
Right.
The economy has, I hate to use these numbers, but we got to put it in perspective. You know, when Bill Gates borrows $1 million, it's very different from, say, somebody else borrowing $1 million.
Right.
It depends on the balance sheet. America today is an economy with over $80 trillion of assets. In 20 years, it'll be over $200 trillion of assets.
Mm-hmm.
So over 20 years, borrowing $3 trillion, is now it's eminently doable
to write a system and get it into self-perpetuating
and helping the economy. Remember,
mm-hmm.
when people have their personal accounts, that money's being put to work to make the economy stronger.
Right. So you don't have a problem with the debt, and that's a very interesting perspective. And I think that is something, the debt to equity ratio, which all businesses have to deal with. We need to keep that in perspective when we think about the government, don't we?
That's absolutely right. And the thing is, with these borrowings over a 40-year period or so, you can pay amortize the bonds, pay them off, depending on the reform you put in. This can
right.
be done in a very fiscally sound way.
Right, exactly. Well, Steve, I don't know what's going to happen. I know that there's a lot of politics involved here, but I do know this. The Social Security funds flip-flop from having more money coming in than going out to having more money going out than coming in on 2017. And you know what, Steve? That's not that far away anymore, is it?
No, it isn't. As we all know, the older you get, you realize how fleeting and how fast time goes. And as you say, what people also don't realize is when the system starts to pay out more than it takes in, all they have are government IOUs. The government's got to come up with the money somewhere.
Right. Steve, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, I'm going to ask Steve, are we going to have to expect, can we expect $2 a gallon gas forever now? Tintel, stay with us. When you're down, we're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Steve Forbes is our guest. And, folks, I encourage you to check out their website at Forbes.com. And of course, I'm a happy subscriber to the magazine. Steve, I subscribe for one of the main reasons is to get you to read your commentary every other week. And I really appreciate the fact that I like what you do, because you come up with about five or six topics, and you write a couple of hundred words on each topic. And it's short and sweet to the point, and it's really well done, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. And, of course, your commentary is always on target, and I think that your success with the radio shows that providing information that business people can use is absolutely ongoing. People want information. That's how you succeed.
Exactly. And of course, your family has a long history of that over the last century and well into this century. Steve, let's talk about gas prices. You had something to say about that recently too. Give us your thoughts on why petroleum prices are over $50 a barrel now.
I think a big part of it, Jim, is inflation. The Fed has been creating too many dollars. It's been doing that for a couple of years, and you saw it first in the commodity prices, particularly the gold price, when that went over $400 an ounce. One knew that there's going to be real problems there. So it's not just China buying oil or India buying oil or, you know, American consumers, you driving more than ever before.
That's part of it, but that's not all of it, is it?
That's not all of it. If you just look at supply and demand, oil would be at $30, $35 a barrel today. That's higher than it was 3 years ago, but nothing like what we have now. And when inflation starts, a mild inflation starts, it hits the economy at different points. It doesn't do it evenly. Oil was one of the first to be hit. And when oil, something like oil, starts to go up, then people start to speculate in it. Mm-hmm. There's probably not a hedge fund in North America that hasn't at some point speculated in petroleum futures. The thing
right.
starts to feed on itself.
You think you,
then
you
people,
wrote
then
that
people buy more than they need.
You wrote that you think as much as $10 to $15 of the price of oil, a barrel of oil, is inflationary and is a result of speculation.
That's right. And I think when the Fed finally gets its act together, as you know, they're raising interest rates, but they haven't reduced the excess money they put into the economy. When the Fed finally gets around to do that, I think you'll see oil prices come down very quickly.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, or what do you think there will be in say, a year from now?
I think it'll be about $35 a barrel.
Really? Well, from your mouth to God's ears, I'll tell you that. For small business owners out there trying to make deliveries, this is tough on them because they can't raise their prices enough to cover these costs. And for all the folks out there who, you know, don't make a lot of money putting $2 a gallon gas in their cars, it makes it rough.
It's a dampener. There's no question.
There's no question about it. Steve, let's move over and talk about democracy. We've got a couple of minutes left to go. What do you think about what's happening in the Middle East right now? Are you excited about it?
I think there's the first time in that rough neighborhood, misgoverned part of the world, there's real hope. People don't like to live under oppressive tyrannies. And if it hadn't been for what the president did, we never would have had elections in Afghanistan, elections in Iraq, elections among the Palestinians, the rise of the Lebanese people. There are stirrings of hope there. And democracy, any kind of a liberal representative government, civil institutions, never easy to establish. There'll be setbacks along the way. But clearly, people don't want what they've had in the past.
You know, I remind people that from the time we declared our independence in the United States till we had a constitution that would work was 11 years. Democracy is not a chia pet, is it? It takes time to grow.
It does indeed. And just look at the history of France. Look at all the different kinds of governments they've had. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to establish, but if you don't keep trying it, it'll never happen. And people clearly in that part of the world want something better than what they've had before.
Steve, I've got 30 seconds. What do you think about the U.S. economy in 2005? Are you heartened about it, or are you concerned about it?
I think the economy is strong, that people's perceptions lag the reality of the economy. The only real serpent in the garden, you might say, is the inflation, the high rising interest rates from because the Federal Reserve hasn't done the job right. So if the Fed just gets its job done right, then I think the economy is in very, very good shape.
Right. Steve Forbes, thank you for being here. Give us your website one more time.
Forbes.com.
Yeah, check it out,
and,
folks.
Jim, thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it, Steve, for being a good friend of small business. Steve Forbes, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back another day, I promise. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.